Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk show host, Randy Fine. Today's special guest, medicine hunter Chris Kilham, considers ashwagandha, yes, ashwagandha, that's the word, to be the king of herbs because it effectively addresses so many of the pressing health concerns that impact us today. In addition, this complex botanical, containing diverse active constituents, has been used safely for thousands of years in Ayurveda and Unani medicine across the Indian subcontinent, and its traditional uses are corroborated by dozens of human clinical studies. Chris Kilham is a medicine hunter, author, and educator. The founder of Medicine Hunter, Inc., Chris has conducted medicinal plant research in over 45 countries. He works with companies to develop and popularize traditional plant-based food and medicinal products into market success. And today he's going to be talking about this ashwagandha that I don't know anything about, and I'm really excited to learn about. So hang on, here we go. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Randy. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, very, very good. You know, I always love summer. It's my favorite season, so it just plain makes me happy.
Sunshine is really wonderful. So, ashwagandha, what is this?
Ashwagandha is a root that has been, you know, it comes from various regions, from India, from parts of the Mediterranean, from parts of Africa. But for about 4,000 years, it's been used really extensively in India. You know, India has the science of life, so they call it Ayurveda. It's their natural system of medicine. And they use about 7,500 different herbs in Ayurveda, and of all of them, the number one is ashwagandha. It's extremely highly regarded as, you know, a life extender, as which they refer to as a rasayan. It's a very kind of elite class of herbs. It's phenomenal for busting stress, for helping to get a good night's sleep, for enhancing energy and strength and stamina, and you know, it really hasn't been popular in the United States despite an avalanche of science and, use among, you know, hundreds of millions of people for 4,000 years. And just now it's really having its time. And, you know, about 600-700 different companies in the U.S. have ashwagandha products. So it's finally getting its lift off. But it's a remarkable botanical. And I've studied it in India, four or five times.
So it's remarkable in what way? What does it do for us? Or what can it do for us?
You know, some herbs just have broader activity than other herbs. I mean, what we know from traditional use is that it's employed to mitigate stress, to help people get a better night's sleep, to enhance sexual function in men and women and overall sexual health, for strength and energy. It's in the old scriptures, they say it gives you the strength of a horse. It's very, very good for the mind in terms of sharpening mental acuity. And what has happened over the past 20 years or so is that a number of human clinical studies have come out showing that the traditional uses also, you know, prove so in clinical settings as well. So especially for stress and anxiety, you know, it helps to lower stress hormones in the blood pretty much across the board. It helps to enhance physical strength and actual, you know, muscular strength and different parts of performance like speed, you know, accuracy. It's quite amazing in that regard. And from a mental standpoint, and I think this is one of the things that really matters, especially to kind of an aging population, we see enhanced clarity of thought, improved short-term and long-term memory, the greater ability to work mentally longer. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of reading a paragraph in a book, let's say, and then you kind of realize you've read it a couple of times because you're tired. That just happens to everybody at a certain point. But if you take ashwagandha, the time that you can spend concentrating on whatever it is you're concentrating on will be greatly expanded. So this is, I think, what makes ashwagandha unique. You know, if you look at something like peppermint, it's very, very good for upset stomach. It's very good for helping to clear the sinuses, and that's about it. But some herbs, ashwagandha probably at the top of the list, do a lot of different things, mostly because they contain 600-800 different active components.
That's amazing that it does that many things. So would someone take that on a daily basis just for vitality and all these other things that you've mentioned, or do we take it as needed? How do you recommend that?
I think of ashwagandha like I think of showering and brushing your teeth. There's every good reason to take ashwagandha every day. Sure, you can take it on occasion if that's what you wish, but you'll get many more benefits if you take it regularly. You know, as I mentioned, I have studied this about, a number of times in India. Four or five different times on trips there, and I've met with a lot of researchers. And I, more recently, over the past couple of years, I have spent time with a group called KSM-66, and they've done about 15 or so different human clinical studies. So on exactly the types of things I mentioned, stress, sexual function in men and women, and I specifically want to talk about the women's sexual function studies in a bit, but for helping to enhance strength and endurance and stamina for people who are active, especially athletic people. And I've been very impressed by the science that they've put out. We've also seen some of the big botanical organizations around the world putting more information out about ashwagandha as well. I don't know, for example, what herbs you might take or how many you take. Many herbs that are very good for us, we don't necessarily feel. If you take ginkgo, let's say, to keep your mind a bit sharp, it works. We know that. But you don't actually feel it. But with ashwagandha, you feel it. You get this greater sense of natural inner energy without any kind of caffeine or central nervous system stimulants. You get a greatly reduced sense of stress. So I can't think of a good reason why somebody wouldn't use this as their, you know, part of their regular daily program for staying well and being, you know, kind of living at the top of their optimal health.
Okay. So how does it, so is it available here in the States?
Yeah, ashwagandha is abundantly available. You know, some places you can get it, for example, as a powder. Okay, if you want to throw that into a blender drink, that's good. I mean, a lot of people do like blender drinks. They like to put, you know, different green powders and things in there. That's one way to go. The KSM 66 extract is in about, 600-700 products in the United States. Very easy to find. Just look for KSM 66. Every natural food store sells ashwagandha now, you know, Whole Foods, Vitamin Shop, Sprouts, you name it. It's online everywhere. It has really gotten a boost because of the science that has come out over the years. You know, we used to have a lot of people criticize us 25, 30 years ago saying, well, there's really not enough science to back up your claims about herbs. And even though there was and has been extraordinary traditional use, the critics were somewhat right. Now, you can't really level that criticism anymore. There are thousands, in fact, hundreds of thousands of published scientific papers on herbs. And ashwagandha now enjoys a really robust and very significant body of human clinical science. So I think, you know, finally this is really come to the fore in the market. It's easy to get. It's amazing to experience. I mean, I don't go a day without taking this, and I find it really does, you know, I'm in my 60s. I find it really helps me with energy and stamina and endurance, definitely sharpens my mind. I don't really particularly get stressed anymore. I feel much more relaxed, yet still able to draw on a kind of seemingly infinite reservoir of energy. So, I'm very impressed by ashwagandha. I think it's one of those things that once you get into it, you go, wow, you know, I would have no reason not to have this in my life.
Well, it sounds amazing. I mean, I want to try it. Does it interact with any other herbs or pharmaceuticals?
Well, that's a funny question. We have seen no negative interaction between ashwagandha and any drugs. And it's synergistic with other herbs. I mean, if you want to take it with Panax ginseng or Rhodiola rosea or Schizandra or any of the so-called adaptogenic herbs that also enhance energy and endurance and stamina and reduce stress, it works very well in concert with those. I have a sort of a reverse way of thinking about the equation, though. Given that, you know, nobody dies from ashwagandha, nobody in history has ever reportedly died from ashwagandha, but every year a couple hundred thousand people in the U.S. die from the proper use of over-the-counter and prescription drugs. My question is always, will a toxic, potentially lethal pharmaceutical negatively interact with the health benefits of something as magnificent as ashwagandha? And the answer may be yes. It may, in fact, harm you to take a toxic pharmaceutical on top of something that's otherwise completely good for you. But it would harm you even if you didn't take the ashwagandha. So I'm very up to speed on what's going on with pharmaceuticals and mortality, and it's an absolute disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace, a tragedy. Many, many people die. Many people get sick from taking things that are heavily advertised or heavily promoted by doctors that do grave damage to health.
Yeah, I agree with you. So is this something that works as soon as you take it, or is this something that builds up, that the more you take it, the more you feel it?
Well, everybody is different. I would say that there are people out there who in just a couple of days will go, wow, I really feel a difference with this stuff. That's amazing. And I think there are people for whom it'll take 2 weeks. So it's not a, it's, I mean, I don't, I can't think of anybody who's taken it and let's say a half hour or an hour later has have said, you know, well, I'm really feeling it. I don't think it's that kind of thing at all. But, you know, a few days is pretty fast. It lowers cortisol in the blood, the primary stress hormone. And as it does that, you get this greater sense of ease. You know, I remember, I think it was in the 90s, there were a lot of articles in business magazines about how if you really wanted to be efficient in business, it was good to run on a bit of stress. And that's really nonsense. In fact, if you can get stress out of your life, you can free up a lot of energy. You know, it turns out with ashwagandha, it causes our bodies to produce more cellular energy, so we have more inner reserves. You know, I'm not looking for five-hour energy or six-hour energy. I'm looking for energy as long as I'm awake, and that's what this does. So, you know,
right.
it is remarkable in that regard. And, you know, I think that, I mean, I'm aware that some psychiatrists are using it in practice now to help with mild to moderate stress and anxiety, and it's having a very good experience in the clinical field as well as in the popular public field.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, I mean, most of my listeners have a low-lying constant stress in their lives because I have
yes.
a lot of people who have had emotional abuse issues. And so
right.
we kind of walk around like with heightened awareness. And so this is a really good thing for you know, to offer the listeners.
Well, you know, those, and you are very expert about this, but those neurobiological reactions that happen as a result of, you know, suffering trauma or abuse in some way, those as you know, become built in. And, you know, those kinds of habitual responses are really wired into our neural biology. But the actual stress experience can be greatly reduced. You know, people who've been abused, for example, are usually uncannily good at reading facial expressions, more so than people who haven't been. That's not going to go away. But the feeling of underlying stress, of the nervousness, of the anxiety that accompanies that may well go away, and that's, of course, a big benefit.
Right. It's a huge benefit.
Yeah.
So the extract, is this something you take like drops of or...
No. For example, the KSM-66 extract, you'll find it mostly in encapsulated products. You know,
okay.
In the world of herbs, there are companies who make extracts and provide different ingredients. And then there are companies who are brands, you know, who you find their products on shelves. And those companies who are on the shelves with labeled products are buying ingredients from different companies. And I spend my time in my career traveling all over the world investigating these botanicals that get made into these different ingredients. So I may be in Siberia, Congo, you know, Thailand, Vanuatu, South Pacific, the Amazon, investigating botanicals that become ingredients or are ingredients that wind up in products. So, you know, if people look, for example, I mean, what I like about the KSM-66 is that it's the most clinically verified of all. So you can find that easily. You know, you can just look that up online to see how many different brands carry that. But most, you know, there is a market out there for sure for liquid extracts of herbs, but for the most part, people appreciate the convenience of encapsulated products when they work well.
Right, I agree. Yeah, I agree. I was just, you know, when I think of extract, I think of some kind of liquid, but that explains it. So KSM-66 is the brand name of your product, right?
Well, I don't actually have a product. I mean, I do some botanical work for them, but the company itself has an extract that shows up in, like I said, about 650 or 700 products in the U.S.
Okay, so KSM.
Yeah, I'm not actually involved in the trade. I research plant medicines all over the world. I work and live with indigenous native people, you know, everywhere, Asia, Africa, South America, the Pacific, and I help companies with their trade, but I'm not actually in the trade myself.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up. You have a really interesting life. Wow. I mean, how did you get to become a medicine hunter? How did you, where did
this
come
from?
Well,
it was a long and peripatetic path. I mean, in my teens, I became interested in herbs, but I have to say I knew nothing about them, nothing, very little. I knew that they were used and that was it. And, you know, from that kind of general interest and lack of knowledge, I got involved in the natural products industry, you know, in natural food stores and co-ops and all of that. And that was a long time ago. And I eventually became knowledgeable enough that at some point in time, people recognized that I had, you know, a substantial understanding of the herbal category. And that took many years, many years. And then I got invited in 94 to be sort of the herbal extract, or expert rather, not the extract, for a project in China. And I went to China and did the project and had a good experience. And when I returned, even though the project itself didn't really work out from a business standpoint, I came back thinking, gee, you know, I could have done this project if I'd organized it better in the following ways. And pretty much as soon as I'd articulated that to myself, I got contacted by an entity that resulted in a 21-year engagement going all over the world doing this work. So a lot of it was extreme good fortune and being, you know, in this whole scene at exactly the right time in history. If I'd had this interest a couple of decades earlier, I probably wouldn't have this career. So a lot of factors came together in my favor in a kind of a serendipitous way.
That's amazing. Well, that's really how, you know, how everything, the most important things in our life happen. The timing is everything, and you hit it right for this particular thing. So you took it from an interest to a major career, and a very sought after expert. That's
I love to travel, and I have not had any experience in my life that has taught me as much. Going to different countries and spending time with people in foreign environments, often people who live very, very differently from us, whether they're Uyghur people in the Xinjiang region of China, who are now, by the way, being persecuted and imprisoned just for being different from the Han Chinese, or it's, let's say, people in Syria, you know, Muslims in Syria. I mean, I've worked in so many diverse places, and I have to say, you know, Randy, I've been treated with extraordinary hospitality and kindness, and I've been shown remarkable things all over the world. I've never been treated poorly, never in an entire career. And I mean, I've, you know, I had a couple of bad cab drivers, but that's it, really. And my, you know, I feel that in part I'm an ambassador of goodwill. You know, many years ago, early in my career, I lived on the Amazon River with a group of natives for a month. I actually went back and did it for another month after that. But that first time, I went around and I met different shamans. And this 103-year-old woman shaman named Maria Sina, who I'd never met and had previously no communication about me, you know, we met and she said to me, "You bridge the worlds." She said, "You tell people about each other. This is very important for you to do. People need to understand each other better." And she really explained to me, I mean, actually what I'd been doing already, but she gave me a sense of focus about it to really, you know, when I go out, if I, let's say, go to the Amazon and do a project, which I've done about 35 times at this point, I come back with images and video and stories, and I do presentations in which I show and talk about the people and the places. And it's my way of hopefully fostering some understanding, some very positive understanding of an appreciation for other people and the diverse lives that people live around the world.
Wow. I think that is just so amazing. What a life you have. How many years have you been doing this?
Well, I've been doing the medicine hunting full-time now for 25 years. I've been involved in the natural products industry for longer than I'll admit on air, but much longer than the 25 years. And, you know, in one instance, I got to be a diplomat to the United States for 3 years, you know, on behalf of a South Pacific country. I'm a chief in another place. I have many shamans as friends in the Amazon. One of my closest friends for many years, sadly he's dead now, is a Tahitian prince. I've done a project with the Syrian army. I mean, I've had some outrageous experiences, and my wife Zoe has traveled with me on a number of projects, though I do most of these without her. But it's been a phenomenal privilege to do this, you know, and if I can get something going economically for a group of Native people someplace and help to establish a chain of trade so that people here can get a particular herb, you know, for supplements, it benefits everybody along the chain. And that's really my aim. You know, I want to do it in an environmentally sustainable way with better wages and, you know, the kind of high standards that you would hope for, because I'm not interested in promoting the sale of rubbish. I'm interested in promoting real health. And this has given me a remarkable platform to do that. So, you know, sometimes I'll be in a boat or a truck with some Native people, and I'll just burst out laughing, and somebody will look at me and go, "What's up?" And I'll go, "I'm working right now." And usually they get the joke. You know, they just like, yeah, man, that's funny, you know. Or sometimes they look at me like, huh, for a minute, but then they get it. It is a real gift to be able to do this.
It sounds like it. So if we were to think about an ashwagandha farmer, what does the plant look like? What do the fields look like? I mean, is this something that they grow like a cornfield, as much as a cornfield, or do they do it in small batches? How is this grown?
Well, for many years, you know, I've done a lot of projects in India, and for many years what I had seen were small plots of ashwagandha. I guess a couple of years ago, I first went to a part of India in Rajasthan province, where now ashwagandha is cultivated on a huge scale. And when I say huge scale, I'm talking thousands of acres. It's a small plant. It probably doesn't get any higher than about 10 inches maximum. Almost looks like you're looking at the top of carrots, sort of, although different leaf structure. And it's the root, as I said, that gets used. And the root really does look like a sort of a whitish-yellow carrot, though thinner. And it's something that's planted every year. They plant it around May. They harvest it around, February or so. In the case of the KSM 66, they have a couple of thousand acres, which is an awful lot of material, of this ashwagandha growing in an area where there are many, many, many thousands more acres growing. So, you know, sometimes what happens, Randy, is that a botanical will be mostly harvested from the wild, you know, for people's uses, and then it becomes popular. And then that wild harvesting can become a real problem. It can actually significantly compromise the supply of the plant. And we've seen herbs, go pretty much to the point of extinction, and that's been very sad. 15, 20 years ago, ashwagandha was headed in that direction. It was headed to real depletion. And then people started cultivating it on a large scale because they could see, the market's going to build for this. So, yes, it is. It's a crop. The responsible companies grow it organically, so without toxic agricultural chemicals. And in the case of the KSM 66, they also give back to the community, helping schools and helping with medicine and other things. And that's also something that I do in my work. I help companies and projects to set up, different activities in communities that help the people. So if I go into a community and say, what do you need? Because I never go in and say, you need this. I always go in and I ask. If they say, well, our water pump is broken, and so we have to walk 3 miles to get water, they're going to get a water pump. If they say, we got no supplies for the school, we just have a building, then, part of the task is to make sure that the project they're involved in generates an endless amount of school supplies and whatever the children need to learn. So ideally, you interact with the community as much as possible so that, they benefit. If a product is successful, then benefits should accrue back to the people who do the really hard work outdoors.
So is there another favorite herb that you have, or is this really the one that you love to promote? Because if you're, you've obviously researched so many different herbs. Is there anything that is something we should know about, a good herb for
us
to take?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, while I do a lot of work with ashwagandha, this is one of many dozens of botanicals that I've, helped with. Another of my very favorites is maca, which comes from high in the Peruvian Andes. And maca, many people credit me with really getting maca popularized in the United States around circa 98 or so, after I first went and investigated in Peru. But it's a root that is actually used as a food by people in the Peruvian Andes. It's funny, too. It looks like a turnip. And when you harvest it and dry it, it goes from, it gets all hard, and then they powder it, and they make flour out of it. And they'll make any manner of baked goods with it, warm drinks, cold drinks, soups, sauces, all different things. It can certainly be made into extracts for the supplement world, and it is. Maca is very widely available, but it's also great in a blender shake. So if you get maca powder, there are some good companies out there like Navitas is one of my favorites. They have a good organic powdered maca. And maca, when you take it, you put a scoop of it into a blender drink along with banana and whatever else you like, it really gives you tremendous energy and vitality. And it contains no caffeine. It contains no stimulants like that. But it's a great botanical. And I've been very deeply involved with maca since 1998 and, have worked up in the Peruvian highlands with maca, I'm going to guess about 20 or more times. It grows very high altitude. We work at 15,000 feet when we're up there, so it's really quite high. It won't grow at normal altitudes. Many different agricultural entities have tried to grow it at lower altitude, and it just won't grow. So you have to grow it in really lousy climate conditions, in crappy soil, where the air is thin, where the weather is harsh. It loves that.
That's amazing.
You know, but you give it a fertile field at sea level, it won't even sprout. So, yeah, maca is a real favorite of mine, another feel-good herb. A lot of athletes, a lot of people who are very active use maca. But if you just plain, you know, want something that gets you through the day more and also tastes good in a blender drink, you can turn to no better botanical than maca, really.
Okay, thank you for that. I have heard of that, and I probably have taken it at some point, but I don't remember. So you're traveling to all these remote places. Is language ever a barrier for you?
Language is also always a barrier. But here's the thing, Randy. If I go, like, for example, I just completed a couple of projects in China. One was in Sichuan and one was in Hunan, different times, both of them green tea projects. When I go to a country, I have a team there. If I go to Congo, for example, which I did a couple of years ago, I had a whole team. We went all around together. There was a botanist. There were people involved in trade. There were other experts. If I go to China, I'm going to always have translation. I'm going to have a driver, whatever. I don't do this work by myself. I mean, there may be places that I go to on my own. I've been to Peru so many times. I can go to parts of Peru on my own. But on these projects, I always have a team. And they're absolutely indispensable to my success. And, you know, it also means that I typically get to travel with people that I really enjoy and appreciate. So there's that benefit as well. But, yeah, without them, I wouldn't have a clue. I spend an enormous amount of time in places where I don't know the language at all. And because I'm traveling from, you know, Arabic countries to different parts of China to Siberia to, you name it, you know, Brazil, where every single time the language is different, I just don't possess the skills required to learn all of those topics.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine you. I mean, that would be amazing if you knew all these languages. So ashwagandha grows strictly in India, or does it grow elsewhere?
Well, you can find ashwagandha in parts of the Mediterranean and in parts of Africa. It's not a significant thing there, though. It's just kind of part of the flora. Whereas in India, they've really made, you know, a study of this root, and they've really developed, you know, a lot of uses for it. In the old texts, they say that the way to prepare ashwagandha is to boil it in fatty buffalo milk. and if you think about that, people in antiquity figured out all kinds of things about chemistry. There are compounds in ashwagandha that are extracted from the root better either with fat or with alcohol because they're fatty compounds. It's harder to get fatty compounds out of a root, let's say, with just water from a chemistry standpoint. So even way back a couple of thousand years ago, they figured out, okay, with this particular type of botanical, you know, you want to boil it in fatty buffalo milk. The same thing with turmeric, because turmeric has a lot of fatty compounds in it, and that'll pull them out. Most people aren't going to boil ashwagandha root or turmeric or anything in fatty buffalo milk and take it that way. So that's why we wind up with extracts on the market where that particular hard work has been done for us. But, you know, it's not as though people 2,000 years ago were primitive. They had a different language for describing things. But still, you know, when I go to any country, I make sure that I spend time with the locals and I ask them, well, how do you use this? And they'll say, well, you know, my grandmother always did this. And usually, if you kind of break down what they tell you, there's real scientific wisdom in that. So I think people have been scientifically minded and observant and innovative and creative for a long, long time. We just keep approaching these things with the science of the day, if you will. And these days, that's human clinical science, research facilities, blood tests, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of wisdom around the world, and it's not based on what we base it on our science, because our science is not really, science is only as good as it is until the new thing gets discovered, so there's so much more for us to learn, and I just think that's amazing that you go around the world and talk to all these people and get this perspective. You are very, very fortunate to have this kind of work. So if someone is sending you, say you were saying green tea, like why would someone send you to a particular place to learn about green tea? Is it to create a trade?
In many cases, companies will send me someplace to see an existing chain of trade, basically for me to check it out, to report back and say, hey, it's great, but gee, I'm not really sure about the extraction facility you're using over there, seems subpar, or whatever. Or come back and say, wow, this is a brilliant chain of trade and it's really good. A lot of the time, I always take photographs, I always take video, I always take extensive notes. So in any case, I come back and talk about these things. And often, that's what a company really wants me to do. They want me to go see a particular project that they have. If I find it up to par, they want me to talk about it. And so I may go to investigate a new source of green tea. I may go to investigate a source that's very well established. I may go and come back and say, hey, you might want to consider making these couple of modifications to what you're doing. So the reasons that I go to these places vary. Sometimes companies say, what's the next big thing? And I say, well, I think the next big thing's going to be, and I tell them whatever I think it's going to be. And usually, because I have spent so long in the industry and am reasonably good at taking the temperature, I can be right about that. And then I wind up going, to maybe Siberia, for example, to get a particular plant or to help set up trade for a particular plant, because I think, this has the qualifications that people are looking for what's coming in the near future. So part of it has to do with, kind of extending my vision beyond today's market and paying attention to what is going to come, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the road.
Very interesting. So we're pretty much out of time. Do you have a website? Do you display any of these videos or pictures or anything anywhere? Or just have a website?
Oh, I got more than you could possibly want to look at, yes. If you go on to medicinehunter.com. You will see that it's a vast and broad site. I have very large sections on medicinal plants, lots and lots of photography. I have links to about 150 or so of the television programs that I've done, because I've been very, very media active, on the Dr. Oz show, and I did Fox News for 10 years in 100 countries. So I have a lot of materials to draw on. There's a lot of good information on various botanicals. So, medicinehunter.com. And you can also look up Medicine Hunter on Facebook and on Instagram and find me there.
Perfect. Wow. Well, I'm, as soon as we hang up, I'm going to look this up and see where I can get it.
Oh, thank you.
I want to try
thank
this wonderful product. Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being my guest. You've been wonderful. And thank you for educating us in this amazing way.
Well, thank you, Randy. It's a great pleasure. And I do appreciate the work you do. It's important and valuable, and it helps people to heal. And you can't ask for more than that.
That's right. And you too. Thank you. Well, Have a great day. Enjoy your beautiful, sunny summer day in Massachusetts. Take care.
Count on it. You take care now.
Okay. Bye-bye. So we are out of time today, but if you have any comments or questions, you can email me at loveyourlife@randyfine.com. Randy, R-A-N-D-I, Fine, F-I-N-E, .com. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.